It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States. You can find them online at windowworldstlouis.com. I am Paul Harris, Ian Geis, and Dan Strauss here in the studio with me. And now Colin Jeffrey sheds his role as anchorman and news director to take on his superhero alter ego, Showbiz Boy, for a little thing we call the Showbiz segment of the show every Friday afternoon. Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing fine.
Nice tights.
We haven't done this in 3 weeks because we were off on Christmas Day
and on New Year's Day
the last couple of Fridays. But essentially, all that's happened in the last 3 weeks is more people have gone to see Star Wars The Force Awakens, right?
Pretty much. I mean, some other movies have done reasonably okay. I mean, Sisters did all right.
But it did?
I mean, it made enough money to not be embarrassing.
Okay.
Same with Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked. It actually didn't embarrass itself.
Wow.
So we can expect installment number 17 this time next year. I don't know.
Who is going to see that?
Kids and heavily medicated adults.
Here's the thing about Alvin and the Chipmunks. The first Alvin and the Chipmunks song, Dan, check me if I'm wrong on this, was in the 50s.
I think so.
Ross Bagdasarian, who called himself David Seville,
yeah,
he did the first sped-up, high-voiced, because he was all the voices on there. He did that, I think, in the late 50s. Maybe the early 60s, but certainly more than 50 years ago. By the time I was a kid of the 70s, the Chipmunks were pretty much over.
Mm-hmm.
Until they did that Chipmunk Punk album in like 1980 or 81, and that kind of brought it back a little bit. Remember that?
Yes.
It was like Chipmunk versions of Blondie and Talking Heads.
I have a picture of the album somewhere from college because mm-hmm. we played it in college.
Yeah, it was fairly clever.
1958.
Okay, thank you. That's the year I was born. That's 57 years ago is when the Chipmunks started. You too. Yeah. So how have the Chipmunks been kept alive all these years in popular culture?
There's still an animated series on.
There is?
Nickelodeon Junior, I think.
Yeah, it's computer animated.
And it looks like the same Chipmunks that are in this movie, but David Seville is animated in that one, whereas
yes, Jason everyone's right? animated. It's very odd. I don't like it. My daughter loves it.
I
leave the room.
I did not know that it even existed anymore. That was not part of my daughter's world at all. Has it been on the whole time?
No, this is fairly recent. Looks like a reboot.
But there have to have been a generational gap there between Chipmunk Punk and the Nickelodeon Junior Chipmunk
show. I remember
show.
Chipmunks as
they
a
were
kid.
Always like it seemed like every 10 years there would be a new variation of animated Chipmunks.
Well, I went and saw the first Chipmunk movie with my daughter when it came out, and she liked it.
Okay. So that was, what, 15 years ago, maybe? Maybe more?
No, not yet.
Well, don't tell me it was last week.
No, it wasn't last week.
She's 21 now. I thought she was finally old enough for it.
This is the second one with Jason Lee, right?
Isn't this is like the fifth.
Oh, they've done it.
Alvin and the Chipmunks. Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel.
Okay, don't
Alvin
go. No, no, no. Stop. I'm sorry I brought this whole thing up. I'm just amazed that this whole part of pop culture was going on, and most people had no idea that they were still out there.
It's like the Ninja Turtles.
Oh,
they just seem to be brought back over and over again in different forms.
Wow. Well, amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about movies that are opening today here in the St. Louis area, and there are two big ones. One is Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight.
That's out. It's going to continue to expand.
Okay.
So it's been out. You could have seen it on Christmas Day in 70mm, but that came complete with an overture and intermission.
Huh?
So unless you were really into it, you probably didn't see it. And as it turned out, his comments, his controversial comments of last year may have hurt him because this is looking to be a rough opening. But it will keep expanding.
I think the rough opening had nothing to do with the controversy. I think it had to do with the fact that the movie, with the overture and the intermission, was over 3 hours long. And this whole hype that he was doing about how he and Harvey Weinstein had managed to get 70mm projectors into many theaters. I think Ronnie's has one so they could show it there, et cetera. Who cares?
Well, if you're a huge film buff, you care.
There are not enough huge film buffs.
And
people are watching films on their phone.
Yes.
Those people are not huge film buffs.
And that's the other issue. 70mm was designed, that wasn't designed, but it was used primarily for large outdoor shots when you could capture more and there was more detail.
The great vistas of America's heartland, yeah.
And this takes place, I spoke about it, was it last week with Frank a bit? It takes place inside a haberdashery, a stop for weary travelers.
But let me just go back to this film buff thing for a second.
Yes.
Because Quentin Tarantino, undoubtedly a film buff.
Yes.
But his trying to make a movie and get it to appeal to people with current technology in their lives already reminds me of a couple of years ago. Remember when Neil Young came out with this music player?
The highest fidelity.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they did it on Jimmy Fallon's show.
Yeah, and he would go on there and complain, oh, because MP3 is so compressed, you're not really getting to hear everything that was in. No one cared.
And it was Neil Young.
Oh, I used to be a woman.
Well, that was part of it. And I laughed when he was on Jimmy Fallon trying to explain how the high quality of this counted when the TV signal is more compressed than our AM signal.
I know.
But it's the same kind of thing. Most people are not cinephiles in the way that, I've got to see that. Is that going to be a pristine new 70mm print? I've got to go see that.
Yes.
No, I'm going to go to the mall and watch it on the thing that's just slightly larger than my home TV.
Mm-hmm. And yes, it was just kind of a foolish decision. I spoke about it a bit earlier, but I enjoyed this movie. You have to be a Quentin Tarantino fan because it's going to have a lot of blood, a lot of profanity, and just widespread use of the N-word.
Okay,
second most.
Well, none of that bothers me at all, but how is it as a movie? Is it entertaining? Is the script good?
I actually enjoyed it, and the reason I enjoyed it is broken down into essentially two movies. Like, you could see where an intermission would fit in this nicely. The first half is a slow burn introduction to all of our characters, and you can tell with the music, it's not off-putting, but it keeps you off-kilter. There's odd music at times, and you pick up on the tension in all of the other cues.
If you go see it without the overture and the 70 millimeters and the intermission, how long is it? Because that version is over 3 hours.
Just under 3 hours.
Oh.
Not much shorter.
Okay. Every time you say overture, I think of Bugs Bunny.
That's what it is.
Dun, 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 dun,
light
dun,
the lights,
dun,
yeah.
Dun, dun.
Yeah, and
you reminded me when you did that of Art Matrano. Remember Art Matrano, the comedian who would come out and do the... And he would link his fingers.
Wow, I can't believe that you know that guy.
Hello, I'm Mr. Obscure.
Wow.
Thank you. By the way, I'm available now in 70mm for you kids listening in.
The second half is the resolution. It's where all the mystery and action starts to happen. I don't want to give anything away because it's just fun to watch it unfold. But again, if you're just hopping on to Quentin Tarantino at this point, you're in for a rude awakening. If you've never seen his movies before,
you may want to go back and start with, Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
It's still a good movie. I enjoyed it. And he keeps his cameo. That's the most jarring part in many of his movies is when he shows up.
Yeah.
He does it well in Few and poorly in More.
He did it really well in Pulp Fiction.
He did. He did it horribly in Django Unchained.
Yes, he did. I did not like the last third of that movie. As soon as they got to the Leonardo DiCaprio part at the plantation, I thought the movie fell apart. I loved the first part with Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz.
And this doesn't have that. I think it's pretty consistent the whole way through. But he does a voiceover after the intermission to recap where things are.
Mm.
And it denotes the big break. Like, okay, we've introduced everyone. Here's what happens.
Okay, so the cast is Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Who is great.
She is?
She's unrecognizable. And you may not recognize her because she doesn't do a lot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She's unrecognizable. She is probably the best in the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. Tim Roth is in this.
Walton Boggins, I think is his name. If you have seen Justified, you'll also recognize him instantly because he plays a yokel in everything, and he plays a yokel in this. So
okay.
Matches. Tanning Chatham isn't or
yeah, Channing Tatum.
Channing.
Woo.
Yeah, I like Tanning Chatham.
Yeah,
he's good too.
Ooh. Channing Tatum, isn't it?
S-word by name.
Yes.
Yeah. So on a scale of 0 to 10, what did you give
it? I gave this about a 7. I liked it.
You couldn't even give it a hateful 8?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So the other movie, and this is the big one that's just coming to St. Louis now. It opened up in one theater in L.A. and maybe one or two in New York, so it could be eligible for award season, is The Revenant.
Okay.
And this is the follow-up movie from last year's Oscar award-winning duo of director Alejandro Iñárritu.
Mm-hmm. He's the guy who did Birdman, right?
Birdman.
Yeah.
And his cinematographer that he worked with on Birdman, Emmanuel Lubezki. Okay. I always struggle with that.
Okay.
It's just an odd name to say.
Okay.
He is looking for his third Academy Award in a row. Gravity, Birdman, and now The Revenant. The reason I mention him is he may be the main character in all of this.
Hmm.
Or the hidden character, because Revenant is gorgeous. It's very nice to look at. The sprawling vistas are gorgeous. The idea for this movie is Leonardo DiCaprio plays Hugh Glass, who's in the 1820s. He's a fur trapper and huntsman, and he is out as part of an expedition to kill animals and take their pelts and sell the furs.
Mm-hmm.
Something goes wrong. He is attacked by a bear, and it then becomes a struggle for his life and members of his expedition, especially Tom Hardy, who's sort of the foil in this, the main bad guy. But we'll get back to that, because I don't necessarily agree that he's a bad guy in the traditional sense. Is he leaving him? What's he going to do with him? How mean is he to him? And then it's a revenge story. It's a straightforward revenge story.
Okay.
It's not a very imaginative plot, and that's my largest issue with this. If you're going to have this amazingly gorgeous shot movie, it should have a lot behind it, and it doesn't. It's just a very bland story. I could not get engaged with the characters. I did not really care about Leonardo DiCaprio's character, is what I nailed it down to. There was nothing in it that said I should care about this character in particular, other than I know he's the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hardy, who plays, again, the bad guy, is bad and is deceitful and kind of a backstabber, but it's the 1820s in the Wild West. I expect him, all of them should be kind of bad by today's standards. That's how I look at it. None of these are great people.
Okay.
And so when you're trying to tell me that this is the guy he's hell-bent on getting revenge against, and he does some bad stuff, I don't believe the friction. I don't buy into it. I'm not invested in one of them winning.
Mm.
And that ends up being where it falls flat, is the story. But again, I struggle. This is an amazing movie to go see and look at. It's just not a very good movie.
Mm.
That's the problem. And so it's really tricky to recommend it, because it's over 2 hours long, and you're going to look down at your watch 25 minutes into it and be like, we're only 25 minutes in.
Wow,
it is slow and plodding, but the action sequences when they're there are so well shot. And if you're familiar with his work, he likes to work in what appears to be long takes. Birdman was shot. It was faked to look like one continuous shot.
Yeah.
In this, he has those shots again where he's following action and then panning around them, and then you're zooming in on the people who are chasing or something, and then you're back. The camera's moving so fluidly that you feel in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just not much story to be wrapped up in, and that's an issue. And
I will say that from the commercial that I've seen for this, I haven't seen the full trailer, but I've seen the 30-second TV commercial.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's an entire movie about Leonardo DiCaprio being mauled by a bear.
A lot of bad stuff happens to him. Like, it's how much punishment can he take? He starts to feel a little bit like a beat 'em up.
There was a movie that came out in 1971.
Okay.
Called Man in the Wilderness, with Richard Harris and John Huston. An expedition, see if this sounds familiar, an expedition of fur trappers in the early 1800s in the American Northwest encounter a bear while hunting. Their scout, Zach, is unfortunately mauled. Zach's wounds are treated by the medic, but the leader of the troop, Henry, played by John Huston, believes he's going to die and orders the troop to move on. And so they leave Zach, Richard Harris, behind to fend for himself in the wilderness after being mauled by a bear. Sound at all familiar to you with The Revenant?
Yeah, and I believe it's because it's also loosely based on this man Hugh Glass's life. That's why. I think they're both based on this story. And so it's a remake of sorts. This isn't... And you're going to watch this, and it's not going to feel like anything new story-wise. You feel pretty comfortable knowing where this story is going to go from the time you meet the characters. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about Leonardo DiCaprio getting a Best Actor. I think that would be a horrible miscarriage to give it to him just because he's done good work in the past and it seems like it's his turn. Mm. He should have won for Departed or all these other things he should have won for but didn't. He's I think, one of the best actors working without an Oscar. He should not win it for this. That would insult all the other work that he's done up until now.
That's interesting.
Because it's... He grunts a lot, and it's like, I don't think you should win an award for grunting.
So what do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 6, but that is because it's great to look at. This is a cinephile movie in that respect. This should have been shot in 70mm.
Sounds like you're saying 6 for the way it looks, 3 for the story.
Yes, that's a valid way to put it. But again, because it is just, it's just great to look at. And the cinematographer and the wilderness are main characters in this.
Okay.
Yes.
I mentioned awards. The Golden Globes are going to be on NBC on Sunday night. It's the only big award show that includes both movies and TV. Well, that's not true. The People's Choice does too, but who cares?
Which I watched this week.
Why?
All of it.
Why?
Because it's crazy. A guy got up, he crashed an awards. Just a guy from the audience got up there and started shouting about some, buy my friend's album, while the women from The Talk were up there receiving
who
an award.
Who cares if the women from The Talk get interrupted at an award show?
You watch it for the ridiculous.
How is that a story at all? I saw that on my Facebook feed, and it was like, stop sending me this.
That's why I watched that.
And how did that guy get up there?
He walked up the steps.
I know. I don't know how anybody, how security does
I don't think they were guarding the women of The Talk very closely. I think that's what they're playing.
How does Kanye West get up there? They probably thought, it's Kanye.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you talk in a minute here, but first, shut up.
Yeah. Hold on. My name's Kanye West. How you doing?
But I mentioned the Golden Globes because Ricky Gervais is back to host it. Now, I will say in the years since Ricky did it in 2010, 11, and 12, mm-hmm. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler did a great job.
As well as anyone's ever hosted, really.
I agree, and they're good. But I like Ricky Gervais. I don't mm-hmm. like some of the stuff he's on. This Derek show he's got on Netflix is just idiotic. And some of the other things he's done I didn't like. But I really liked the British version of The Office. I really liked his movie, The Invention of Lying. Mm-hmm. I really liked his HBO series, Extras. And I like his attitude when he goes on the Golden Globes, which I'm sure you'll see again on Sunday night, which is, look, I'm going to make fun of you people, but you're all rich, you're all famous, and you're all here to get awards for how rich and famous and talented you are. You got to have a thick enough skin that I can say stuff about you without getting mad at me.
Yes.
Well, some people did get upset, and today Rolling Stone's website had a list of the most offensive things Ricky Gervais has said, none of which would be offensive to anybody who was not in that room. I brought in a montage that will give me a sample of what Ricky Gervais has said in the 3 years he's hosted the Golden Globes.
On a serious note, just looking at all the faces here reminds me of some of the great work that's been done this year by cosmetic surgeons. You all look great. But actors aren't just loved here in Hollywood, they are loved the world over because they're recognizable. You can be anywhere. You could be in the third world, okay, and you get a glimpse of a Hollywood star, and it makes you feel better, okay? You could be a little Asian child, with no possessions and no money, but you see a picture of Angelina Jolie, and you think, oh, mummy. Honestly, I like a drink as much as the next man. Unless the next man is Mel Gibson. It's going to be a night of partying and heavy drinking. Or as Charlie Sheen calls it, breakfast. Wow. Whoa. So, let's get this straight. What he did was, he picked up a porn star, paid her to have dinner with him, introduced her to his ex-wife, as you do, went to a hotel, got drunk, got naked, trashed the place while she was locked in a cupboard. And that was a Monday. What did he do New Year's Eve? A lot of big films that didn't get nominated this year. Nothing for Sex and the City 2. No, I was sure the Golden Globe for special effects would go to the team that airbrushed that poster. Great job. Girls, we know how old you are. I saw one of you in an episode of Bonanza. You know our next presenter from such films as Hudson Hawk, Look Who's Talking, Mercury Rising, Color of Night, Fifth Element, Heart's War. Please welcome Ashton Kutcher's dad, Bruce Willis. I love this next presenter. He's so cool. He's the star of Iron Man, Two Girls and a Guy, Wonder Boys. Sorry, these porn films. What? Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Bowfinger. Really? Yeah. Up the Academy. Come on. He has done all those films, but many of you in this room probably know him best from such facilities as the Betty Ford Clinic and Los Angeles County Jail. Please welcome Robert Downey Jr. For any of you who don't know, the Golden Globes are just like the Oscars, but without all that esteem. I love Eddie Murphy. He loves dress up, doesn't he? Versatile. He's versatile. No, he is. Bit of trivia for you, actually. Eddie Murphy and Adam Sandler, between them, played all the parts in the movie The Help. Isn't that brilliant? They were brilliant. I can't believe they're not here. Or maybe they are. They're masters of disguise. They could be. And I mustn't mention Mel Gibson this year. Not his private life, his politics, his recent films, and especially not Jodie Foster's Beaver. I haven't seen it myself. I've spoken to a lot of guys here, they haven't seen it either, but that doesn't mean it's not any good.
That's really good stuff, isn't it?
Yes.
And, you know, when you see the story the day after about all the offensive things and all the people who were offended, they're the rich, famous Hollywood types in the room who might have been offended, but who cares? They get free booze, they get free dinner, they get millions of dollars for what they do. Come on.
Yeah. And that's always my favorite part of the awards season is seeing what they get to take home in the swag bag.
Right, they get that too.
Oh, they get a $10,000 life coach gift certificate.
Yeah, and it's not like he's not saying anything that anybody doesn't know about. Did people not know about Mel Gibson's drinking and anti-Semitic remarks and Robert Downey Jr. going away and all that? When I was speaking of Hollywood, I was in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, and I had dinner with my friend John Max, who used to be a contributor to my show when he was writing monologue jokes for Jay Leno for 22 years. And I said, so what are you up to now? He said, oh, I'm writing for the Golden Globes and the Academy Awards. And I said, wait a second. I know you've worked on both of those shows through the years, but are you telling me that in the same 2 months, you're going to write jokes for Ricky Gervais and for Chris Rock? He said, yeah, that's what that means. In fact, I have a meeting I have to go to as soon as we have finished dinner. I got to go to a meeting at Chris's house.
Oh, wow.
And I said, just shut up. Just shut up. But he probably helped write some of these for Ricky, and I'm sure that we'll hear a lot of those on Sunday night. One last showbiz thing, unless you had something else you wanted to mention.
The other movie coming out this week is called The Forest. It's about the suicide forest in Japan. It's a real place. It's a horror movie. That's all you're going to get from me. A girl goes looking for her sister who went missing in the suicide forest.
I hate when that happens.
I don't think... It's not a true story, Dan.
What?
The last thing I wanted to mention is Robert De Niro recently did an interview, and they asked him about what he has coming up. And, by the way, he's in this... what's this new movie he's in with the kid? He goes Spring Break with him. It's not Ashton Kutcher. Maybe it is Ashton Kutcher.
No, it's... he was in The Neighbors... Isn't it Zac Efron?
Yes, it's Zac Efron.
Yes.
So, you know, when I saw the commercial for that, I thought, you know, people talk about Robert De Niro and his legendary career. They forget about stuff like this or Rocky and Bullwinkle or some of the other horrible things he's done. But here's one I'm looking forward to. He's going to make another movie with Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
Who they've made some fantastic movies, legendary movies together. This one's called I Heard You Paint Houses, which is based on a book by a guy who wrote about the story, the biggest mob hit in history, a guy by the name of Frank the Irishman Sheeran, who's going to be played by De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
He says, to explain the title, to paint a house is to kill a man. So that's what the movie's about. This guy confessed to the guy who wrote the book, Charles Brandt. Sheeran said he handled more than 25 hits for the mob and for his friend Jimmy Hoffa.
Wow.
And so De Niro and Scorsese are making this. Oh, by the way, there are two other actors in this you might have heard of. Al Pacino and Joe Pesci.
Well, there you go. The band's all back together.
What's the name of that movie that they did together, De Niro and Pesci, where they really only had one scene together in a cafe? One's a cop. I think Pacino's a cop and De Niro's a crook. Is it called Heat?
Heat.
Oh, Heat. Yes.
Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't Pesci. That was Al Pacino.
Yeah.
That was Pacino and...
Pacino and De Niro,
yes.
Right.
De Niro, yes.
And, of course, they're both in Godfather 2 because De Niro plays the Marlon Brando character, Vito Corleone, in his younger days, but they didn't have any scenes together.
And Val Kilmer was in that, too, as well, right? Heat?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
The greatest heist movie.
Yeah.
The greatest heist movie?
Was, in my opinion, I don't know good. That it gets better than that.
It was really good.
Wow. I can't think of one that beats it right now, but I'm going to say wow. All right. Colin will be back with the news at the top of the hour. We're going to take a break. When we come back from this break, we still have a little showbiz to do because I'm going to introduce you to a guy named Dan Stedman, who's a writer and director who has a movie that's premiering tomorrow, a red carpet premiere tomorrow in Belleville. The movie's called Proximity, and it stars a whole bunch of people from the Bi-State area, including Cardinals pitcher Adam Wainwright. We'll find out about that right after this on the Big 550 KTRS.